Hello and welcome to pod 33 of Total Football Debate. Now, unfortunately, we are one man down, but we're not the Arsenal, and we are going to carry on, and we have not postponed this podcast. This podcast will go ahead, despite regulation 2.40 of the Premier League. So, Cookie, he's an Arsenal fan. Sorry, we're carrying on without one. Pod 33, then. Quite an eventful week. I should think it's not just the matches on that tone that we'll be discussing. Obviously, a lot of controversy. Burnley, the latest club to submit a postponement request for the game tomorrow against Watford. And it's quite frankly yet ridiculous now. So I'm joined with Kosti and Scott. We're the ones that haven't bottled it this week. Lads, how are we doing?
Yeah, good. I was thinking about going out on loan to another podcast in the meantime just to try and get this one cancelled or postponed, but I decided to turn that loan move down.
Many thanks. And Scott, how are you doing?
I've got a few words to say about that when we get to it. We're certainly not postponing the talk of the North London Derby on our show. The game didn't go ahead, but we've got a lot to say about it. That's all I'm going to say on that one.
And of course, we've got the rest of the weekend's fixtures that did go ahead and could be asked to field the squad to cover off as well. So then, well, let's crack straight into it, but I'm not going to go straight into the game, lad. Let's talk about this situation here. So, North London Derby, Scott, close to your heart, looking forward to it. Obviously, didn't end up going ahead. Arsenal filed for the submission, and it has to be said, in literally the final hour, it seemed to have got finally confirmed that they weren't going to go ahead. I don't know about you, but this whole thing seems crazy to me that AFCON injuries and seemingly transfers has come into the equation now. Now, I don't agree necessarily with the flack that Arsenal have got, because I think actually any other Premier League club would have done the same. And the problem herein isn't the clubs. It's the rule that the Premier League have made, whereby clubs, if they get to a certain number of players unavailable, they are able to submit for an eligible postponement. Problem being, obviously, of course, this was first introduced for the purpose of COVID and COVID only. And what Premier League clubs have done, if they've taken that, and they've also taken the letter of the law, where I think it's you have to be able to field 14 senior players at any one time for a game in order for a game to go ahead. Factor that in, so COVID, then injuries, and now seemingly AFCON. And it seems like if they're not happy with the squad they've got available for the game, they'll submit for a request. I personally don't think there's any consistency. I mean, I look back as recently as Boxing Day when Palace tried to get Spurs' game postponed because we had five players out with COVID plus a manager out with COVID. That seemingly wasn't enough. Arsenal come up obviously with one player out with COVID and the rest injuries. And so I think there's twofold here. One, interpretation of the rules, and two, consistency on decisions, because some clubs have had less lenient decisions, whilst others have had more out with COVID and still had to plough on and do it. So where do we
go? And there's some clubs, well, there's one club as well that I'll give a special mention to later, who have just fielded a bunch of like between 15 and 19-year-olds or named 15 to 19-year-olds and just got on with it, which is Leeds, which I think fair play to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It just, you kind of start looking back and just going like, what has happened since COVID has come in that has now allowed clubs to, I mean, I don't even remember really games being postponed, even at the height of COVID for a few players out. It was if the whole squad had it, then it was like, okay, we've got to be careful. And postpone the game. I'm fairly sure there were still four or five players that had COVID and games were still going ahead. So whatever discussions happened, I don't know. You know, we've discussed this quite a lot. These clubs have known that the AFCON's been coming for ages. Now, if you want to be reckless and stupid and start loaning out players during the African Cup of Nations to sort of thin out your squad and then start crying about it, then... You know, you should almost be punished for your recklessness. And the fact that today Arsenal have then proceeded, after complaining that they don't have any players or enough players to field, have then gone ahead and loaned out another one to Udinese.
The
just
timing
blows
of
my
that,
mind.
The
it's
timing
just,
of that is
it's
disgusting.
Just, it's so inconsiderate for fans. And the fact that then you had Arsenal fans, fair play to most Arsenal fans. I've seen a lot of them disagree with it, and that's you know, fair play to them. I think I even heard Laura Woods, who, let's be honest, is god of punditry, come out and say, I can't even defend my own team. I don't agree with it. Says a lot. The problem is, I mean, there are still some fans out there. I mean, there was one that responded to a tweet about that loan that said, well, what did you expect us to do? Field 8 defenders in different positions? It's like, yeah, you're a first team squad. I'm sorry, you can't just then go. I mean, otherwise that's like Spurs, as I said, Spurs being without Harry Kane for 6 months and saying we ain't got a striker, because let's be fair, we've only ever had one striker since Harry Kane's been there, and say we can't field a player. Can't put Son up top, he's a midfielder.
The regulations, the regulations don't say that you've got 14 players, but three of which have to be strikers, five have to be defenders, four have to be midfielders, and you have to have two goalkeepers, whatever the maths is. It's 14 fit first team players. So if that means a centre-back playing centre-mid, then so be it. Come on.
I mean, let's not... We spoke a lot about Arsenal, but the one that's kind of set the precedent for me, if you cast your mind back, Man United initially, I think, got the first postponement, I think, for their game against Brentford, I think it was. And that was for a relatively small amount of supposed COVID cases. The one that strikes out for me, and that's kind of the problem child out of all of this is you speak about a lot about Arsenal and their one positive case and they shouldn't have done it. But the one that screamed naivety on the Premier League's part and the, you know, the governing bodies of League Cup and so forth is Liverpool, you know, and the fact that they came out the day before that cup game and said, oh, we've been obliterated by COVID, we'll have to close the training ground, do this, that and the other, absolutely fine if that's the case. But then to come out 24 hours later and they publicly announced that their training ground was now open again within 24 hours. And then for Klopp then, 24 hours later after that, to disclose that actually most, if not all of their positive tests were false positives, probably. That to me, the red flag for me is, why on earth with the Premier League did they not contract someone like a Randox or a private healthcare lab process and provider to universally go across all the Premier League clubs? You have one person sitting at every Premier League club training ground. They carry out the swabs. You get the test. You know, at my office in London, you go to work, you go in there, you get a test. They email your line manager and yourself within 30 minutes with your result. Why on earth aren't these results disclosed and processed by a third party? You know, so where's the control?
There's no sort of
the Premier League.
There's sort of like there's no official. You know, because it's difficult to argue, like, you know, I know Liverpool were the first team and it's difficult to believe, etc. But they brought, like, showed official documents saying, well, it's not really our fault, really. And the thing is, I think the reason why they sort of, in inverted commas, got away with it is because they were only playing a small team anyway in Arsenal. So I don't think people really cared. I'm obviously joking, Cookie. But at the end of the day, it's sort of, you pick and choose the rules that you want. And it's sort of like, okay, then we've got a big game coming up, boys. Go around lick public door handles and try and catch COVID so we can get this postponed, so we can maybe bring in a few players over January, strengthen our squad, and then everyone's back again. So yeah, just go and lick door handles.
Can we talk about like a solution? And I mean, look, for Burnley, what are they now? 5 games in hand, right? Now, if Burnley have COVID, genuinely, fair enough. But everyone can see it would be in Burnley's best interest to play as many games as possible post-January transfer window. They're without Max Cornet at the AFCON, and they've lost Chris Wood, which they didn't expect. No one prepared for that.
Nail on the head.
So Burnley are in shitstorm, right? They've got five games. And if they win those five games, not that it's likely going to happen, they could stay up. So they know that they could do everything possible to basically get themselves in a best position to go ahead and play these games. That should come in, and Ralph Hussenhout nailed it on the head, was whatever games were postponed, whatever your squad was at that moment in time, forget COVID. If players are back from COVID, that's fine, because that's what the games were postponed for. Fair enough. But if you've made any signings or you've got games that were due to go on whilst the AFCON was on, they can't play. So Cornet can't play, and any new striker they brought in whilst the game show, if Burnley Watford tomorrow, for example, Burnley would have been out without Cornet and Wood, because Wood's gone. Even if they make a sign in and Cornet's back, they shouldn't be allowed to play. Because again, you know, why should, for example, Spurs, and the only reason I'm using Spurs as an example is because I know we're one of the only teams that actually doesn't have any players at AFCON. Serge Aurier was our last player and now he's gone. So why should we be penalised for that? Because that's an advantage for Spurs. That's the way we played out. And also, what about these teams? What about Leeds, for example, that time when they were crying for a game to be postponed with nine players out with COVID or whatever, and they refused it? We got slated, Spurs, for trying to get our first game postponed, and we had 10 players out, four coaching staff out, and we got ridiculed for it. And now Arsenal are getting a game postponed for one. Like, where's this logic gone? But I agree with Hussenhout. I think that should be the rule. I think that should come in and say, yeah, it's absolutely fine. We'll postpone your game. But any players that are currently, as of today, out injured, so Arsenal, Tottenham, when the game does get played, Arsenal shouldn't be able to play anyone that didn't have a COVID issue.
And also, Xhaka's suspension would have been served when it should have been served.
Yeah.
So what's all that about?
So how does that work? Like, it's just knocked it way out of sync. So what was a stupid incident has now gone and benefited Arsenal.
The Premier League needs to, well, they should have stepped in. The rules should have been clear. That's the thing. They've never been clear from the off. And there's no consistency. You've got some clubs that have five cases and get games postponed. You've had some cases, you know, clubs that have, you know, three cases and, you know.
But they didn't specify.
It makes zero sense.
They just said
it's all bollocks. It's ridiculous.
They said players out, didn't they? They didn't say COVID, even though it is relating to COVID that we all know. However, it's just sort of like, we'll take advantage of that. It's like Burnley. The teams that they were playing against were the ones cancelling on them. Then all of a sudden, they lose Chris Wood. They lose Cornet. And they think, well, hang on a minute. We're going to use COVID as an excuse to they'll cancel against you now. So we can then bring in reinforcements. We can get Cornet back from the AFCON. So they're going to build on it. Of course, they're going to take advantage of it. And it takes the piss out of the rules.
Well, even Arsenal, like Tottenham, I mean, I would go as far to say, like, you know, Son shouldn't have been able to play this game. So whenever Tottenham Arsenal is played, Son shouldn't be available, but he now will be. So, and Spurs are meant to be one of the most active in the January market. God knows what they're going to do. So what are Arsenal going to turn around and say? Are they going to be happy about that? But they've made their own bed. And, you know, it's not something we should linger on too long because everyone knows it's a joke. And it seems to be week in, week out. We've got games that actually did go ahead and we should talk about them. So unless anything else needs to be said, then
it's only Leeds that really come out with flying colours, as I said at the start. They've given debutants to six players this season. Like 19-year-olds, they had a 15-year-old on the bench on Saturday. You just think, well, do you know what? Fair play. So that's and they came out and they won, didn't they? So what does that tell you? Is it a squad game?
Well, I mean, if I could give double points to Leeds, I would after that game, because fair play to them. I hadn't heard a couple of those players. I didn't know who they were. And they came out and turned over a West Ham side away from home, may I add.
And how good was that game?
I'm not. I'd probably go as far to say that's probably one of the games of the season.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Just because of also the fact that the outcome went in favour of all this dispute over the Premier League, and they just proved it. So fair play to them. Whilst we're off that, we might as well move on to the televised games then, Koss. Jason will be back in 2 seconds. Let's talk about Man City-Chelsea, because it was a battle at the top. It wasn't a great game by any stretch. There's other games that I want to talk about more so, but because they were top of the table, we need to discuss it.
It's quite easy to conclude, really. Lukaku was poor. His decision-making was terrible. He had two golden chances. One of them he decided to pass to a player that was clearly offside. And the second one, he just panicked and also almost just kicked it straight at the goalkeeper. Four of the last five games between Chelsea and Man City have only required one goal to win. So Chelsea really should have been chomping on the bit there when they were probably ahead in the first half an hour in that game. And as I said, Lukaku had a golden chance to put him up 1-0. And that could have been enough. And history proves that should have been enough, really, because Man City weren't great that day. Chelsea looked good to start off with, but from then, there's only really going to be one winner when Lukaku was missing those chances, and that was Man City.
Yeah, I mean, Man City, they never looked like they got out of third gear, to be honest. Chelsea didn't look like they rocked them at all. It was all a bit all over the place for Chelsea. I mean, to have four shots on goal in a game that, let's be fair, they desperately needed to win to have any chance of clawing back any points and catching Man City. And if anything, that's further cemented that, well, top of the league is done. Well, it appears to be. I mean, let's be fair, Liverpool win their game in hand. They go on 48 points and I've seen a bigger gap closed. So 8 points between the two if they win that. But yeah, City just didn't look like they were ever in trouble, to be fair. So not a lot to say on that. Let's go on to the West Ham Leeds game, because we alluded to it briefly, being a great game and all. Also, we'll mention the West Ham Norwich game, because we actually haven't spoken about West Ham in that game since our last pod, because we did it live when Southampton were playing Brentford and West Ham Norwich was the day after. So we won't talk about it from Norwich's perspective, because we'll do that the other way around like we usually do. It's the only game that we have two teams that have played twice. But West Ham Leeds, as a game of football in itself, it's got to be right up there, hasn't it?
Superb game. That was absolutely gripping. It had everything. And Bowen is on absolute form at the moment and looking completely on fire. And then he was the one that's almost cost West Ham. Well, he did cost West Ham the points ultimately at the end, where anything other than what he did would have gone in. So he would be absolutely gutted from that, which is sort of undeserved considering how well he performed in that game, how good the game was. He didn't deserve that.
33 shots between two teams. What a game.
And it's amazing that people still don't know the offside rule. When Leeds scored their fourth goal and it was rightly obviously disallowed, people are still thinking, well, there's a player there. And it's just like, oh, for goodness sake, why do you not know the offside rule yet? I don't understand it. But yeah, what a game. And I was looking as well with Leeds that I was praising them earlier, which is the rarity. The Leeds' teenage debutants, he's given debuts to 8 players since the 17th of September. And all of them apart from one are 19 and the other one is 18. So what does that tell you? It is possible to field a team during COVID without having to bottle it and cancel it because of one COVID case, two COVID cases, AFCON, etc., etc. And Bielsa, fair play to him. You got your reward on the Sunday.
I mean, we mentioned we were going to talk about the West Ham Leeds game and briefly touch on West Ham Norwich, because from a West Ham perspective anyway, because obviously we haven't been able to. I mean, Jared Bowen.
Isn't he 5'7" and he scored, what, 3 headers this week?
He's a header.
I was about to say.
Last week, but
I mean, one season wonder maybe to this extent, but the difference with it is this isn't being a one season wonder while everyone else is playing so well. There's so many players not playing very well that are in that England setup, whether it's Grealish, whether it's Sancho, whether it's Rashford. You can't not take him at this moment. I would put it on there. I mean, unless a winger is eluding me, I would say, well, obviously Salah would 100%. I would say he's top three wingers in the league this season 100%. By a long shot.
And he's so versatile as well. Obviously, he can play anywhere in that front three, drop in the pockets and do whatever. He's well ahead of Sancho, Rashford, a lot of them. There is no, you know, it's one of them. Like, it's not even a no-brainer. If he's not called up into that England squad in the next round of games and then head him for the World Cup in Qatar, I mean, he can't do anything else. He cannot do anything else at the moment.
6 league goals, 7 assists. The only player with more assists is Salah on 9.
He's been brilliant. He's been brilliant.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. I mean, I would take him in a heartbeat at this moment in time. As horrible as it would be, I would in a second.
Well, he should be, in theory, even if you look at the centre forward options for England, really, he should be the first name on the team sheet. When you think of the English pool of attackers out of like Grealish, Rashford, Sancho, Harry Kane, Sterling, Bowen and Sterling are the first ones on that England team sheet in those kind of attacking areas, without a shadow of a doubt.
There's not a lot to say from West Ham perspective, beating Norwich. It is what it is. We'll talk about that and the other way around when it gets to Norwich. But we're praising West Ham and they've gone and lost to Leeds. A Leeds in dire straits.
I mean, Leeds, as Kossi alluded to, the fact that they had like all those youth players on the bench didn't look. I don't think they even requested for the game to be postponed. I could be wrong. I don't think they did.
No.
They obviously had injury concerns because Bamford was out as well, and there was a load of talk pre-game about fitness levels and Bielsa's style catching up with the squad. But the fact that he's been able to do all of that and produce that kind of performance away from home against a team that are back in form again. I didn't see the result coming at all, to be honest. I thought it was going to be comfortably 3-4-1 West Ham. But the fact that Leeds have done that in the face of what's been discussed the last week or two with Arsenal kind of postponements, as Kossi says, it makes a mockery of the rest of the clubs putting their requests in, to be fair. And if Leeds can do it that way, then, you know, the rest of the Premier League team should be there. And that's the thing. There's been a lot of talk about the Premier League being brought into disrepute and that, you know, the competition's, the whole kind of competitive side of it has gone out the window because it's one rule for one for the other. And, you know, people are getting different outcomes and different levels of volumes of COVID cases are coming in different outcomes. Like, it kind of makes the rest of the competition, I wouldn't say void, that's quite strong, but it certainly brings it into disrepute from a competitive level.
So, yeah, I mean, we were all surprised. None of us had Leeds to get a point. In fact, none of us had Leeds to be in within 2 goals. We all said 4-1, 3-1. So that's generally where we thought it was going.
But I bet West Ham fans didn't finish that game and thinking, oh, that was shit, wasn't it? We didn't deserve any from that game. We're back to our old selves. None of them would have left that stadium and thought anything other than, what a game, and we were unlucky there, move on.
It was a brilliant game. And let's be fair, either team would have been deserved winners the way they were playing. I mean, Leeds could have had 4 if it weren't for, that little touch on the line. But at the end of the day, it's what it is. But yeah, it was a really good game. And bearing in mind that both teams had a lot of noticeable absences, you know, Benrahma, Souček, Zouma, Leeds obviously being without Bamford, Phillips. Says a lot about the quality of football. The next fixture we're going to talk about, the Aston Villa Man United game. Well, 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 who would have thought it? The magician comes back to haunt them, eh?
One of the funniest things I saw on Twitter was a Man United fan saying, "Oh, Coutinho's coming on, ha ha ha, his day was over in 2016. What the hell is he going to do?" And we talk about how things like hilariously age on Twitter, and that was one of the funniest things I've ever read, because the thread to that afterwards, you didn't even have to say anything, you didn't even have to goad it, because every single person afterwards were, that was the most sort of satisfying, like, you know, legs crossed, sort of like, take a seat and just think, do you know what, that is brilliant. And he was brilliant when he came on as well. And I want a shout out to Brendia as well, because obviously I was gutted when we lost him at Norwich, but he was superb against Manchester United. That was the player that they signed, and I thought maybe he couldn't work in the same attacking three, attacking four, or whatever you want to call it, with Coutinho, but he absolutely bossed that game for so long and somehow still was losing 2-0 at one point. And you think, well, Brendia, if they can get Brendia and Coutinho firing together, that's going to be dangerous.
Well, I'll tell you what, Man United, I mean, from what I remember, and I was watching it with a Man United fan, all I kept hearing from the Man United fan that I was with was him celebrating David De Gea saves all game. I mean, one of them was from Brendia as well, the header that just, you know, quickly went at him and he got his hands up. And it was a great save, to be fair. But then again, it's something that we keep going on about week in, week out with Man United. It's just don't look like the Man United at all. And funny enough, Bruno Fernandes has his best game this season for Man United. And lo and behold, his Portuguese compatriot wasn't in the side. So, you know,
that's,
if I want further
saying
ammunition to my point, that would be
yep.
it. Jacob Rabsey, he looks like a good little talent as well for Aston Villa.
Yeah, he's
but
carried
news,
on again.
Yeah, he was brilliant. But news today, Man United and McGinn. I mean,
he won't go. He won't. Why on earth? I mean, I'm sorry. They keep getting linked with these players in the summer. Why on earth is any young player or any player worth their salt, even John McGinn, who's at Aston Villa, he'll look at Grealish at Man City for a start, but also, why on earth are you going to go to Man United, who they're probably not even do enough, they'll barely do enough to finish in the Europa League spots at the end of the season, rather. So, I don't know. It depends who the manager. I mean, what I find funny is,
This is what I was going to say. Why would you join when you don't know if the manager wants you yet?
He's been linked for the past two or three seasons. I think since they got promoted from the Championship, there was a loose link that Ferguson was a fan of him, I think. But again, who's really in charge there? Who's really making the decisions? And it's not like he's this young, bustling kind of 21-year-old burst on the scene. I don't know how old he is off the top of my head, but I'm pretty
and
sure.
And United fans would sniff down at that as well. They'd completely put their noses down to John McGinn joining our midfield, which is wrong.
He's 27, by the way.
26. And he's a very... So again, by the time summer comes and in his first year, he's 28. So he's kind of, I mean,
he's sort of in his prime, but Man United fans will think they're far too good for him.
Well, Scott McTominay's better than him.
He's a good, he's a good Premier League player, but outside of that,
he fits in well with Aston Villa.
He is a very good, he's a workhorse, and he's everything that, you know, Aston Villa need. And yet, funny enough, he didn't even play. It says a lot that one player comes on, changes the whole game in the space of 10 minutes. I think Villa would be very happy with that. I think that would be right up there with Gerrard's, probably his favourite point of the season. Dinya played well. At left back, he's seen to have slotted right in. But yeah, things seem to be ticking. Fair play to Man United. You know, I thought that Alanga really looked quite promising, the Swede young boy on the wing. Again, highlighting another point, why on earth did they sign two players like Ronaldo and Sancho when you've got young talent like that on the wings? Their problems won't be solved until the two centre midfielders are taken out. You know, Fred and Matic are just not going to do anything for Man United, in my opinion. And until that changes, I don't think a lot's going to change for them. So yeah, I think Gerrard got one up, because personally, I think he would have taken that all day long over the previous fixture against Man United in the FA Cup, to be honest. So happy days. The final talking point is the final televised game that we saw over the course of those 3 days. And it's the, let's rub some salt in the wound, shall we? It's the M23 Derby.
No way. Get out.
Careful what you say on Twitter. Just that's all I'm saying. Even no. If it's a tongue-in-cheek little tongue-in-cheek poll, a little bit of a laugh, a little bit of a joke.
Now you know why. Now you know why everyone hates them.
Touching bunch, isn't they, eh? Jace, cool.
Brighton fans do not like a little bit of banter and a little bit of light-hearted humour. Christ. And even when you explain to them, it's just like, oh, come on, it's just a bit of a joke. Effing and blinding and abuse and like, oh, it shows what you are, etc. It's just like, well, listen, I'm a Norwich fan. I know other people don't care about Norwich versus Ipswich, but at least it's an East Anglian derby where, you know, it's our only team close to us. And you get some Brighton fans reply saying, oh, you should come down, it's a good atmosphere, it's a nice place. And I'm just like, yeah, it's a beautiful place. And then you get some fans telling you to go fuck yourself.
I
just meant Brighton in general. Brighton's a nice place. Yeah, they talk about location.
The stadium's not even in Brighton. It's in like in the middle of nowhere on an industrial estate. It's shit.
I mean, it is hilarious. It's like, you know, you see that meme of John Travolta from Pulp Fiction when he walks into the room and looks around. That strikes me as how Brighton looked for their only rivalry. They just looked at themselves on Google Maps and went, will you be our rival? And Southampton went, fuck off, we've got Pompey.
So true.
And then they've just gone, well, the nearest road is the M23 to Palace. And Palace are like, go on then, only for a little while until we go on to bigger and better things.
but to quote a Palace fan, it's just like, well, you had to Google that to see it's the M23, which shows how much you know. It's just like, well, we're just trying to get a bit of perspective. It's a little bit of banter, a little...
It was hilarious because that guy that tweeted about, you know, the fact that you called it the M23 Derby says it all, really, because you don't know what the rivalry is. I went, no, we do know, mate. It was over a cup of coffee and a V sign, and the fact that you had to play each other five times in a short space of time. I didn't get a response to that one. He didn't.
But the thing is, what frustrates me is everyone else.
Really, isn't it?
Exactly. Everyone else will like the initial response from that person. You'll reply with the actual answer to it, explaining it, and that will get ignored. It's just like head and hands moments. Thinking, do you know what? It's just a little bit of a laugh, just a little bit of banter.
I mean, and at the end of the day, how half of these rivalries start are laughable anyway. Yeah. But the fact, the point that TFD was trying to make, which is where it got lost, and this is me being serious here, is not questioning whether the rivalry is legit. You know, you can see Brighton fans don't like Palace, and you can see the what it meant to Palace when they scored. We weren't arguing that. And when people started throwing, well, no one cares about this rivalry. Yeah, we get that. But the main point is, if you list out a number of rivalries, whether it's Tottenham Arsenal, for example, Celtic Rangers, or even you start coming down and you start talking about the smaller rivalries, you know, like Norwich Ipswich. The difference is we can explain why half of them exist. No one understands, really, or finds it worth talking about why Brighton Palace rivalry even exists. It's just hilarious. You know, they need to just chill out a little bit.
This is how desperate Brighton are. Let's just sum this up, right? This is how, and this is a stat that I love. They always build up our game about shitty old Palace and how shit Palace are, right? But as from the day that we played them, post-game, this is. So...
I saw this, actually. I think I know where you're going with this. Is this how long it's been since Brighton? Sorry, Brighton fans. And Seagull Simon, I really am sorry.
I love Seagull Simon, or whatever his name is.
I'll do it from today's date, but it's been 1,045 days since Brighton last beat Crystal Palace. And another one for you, in Graham Potter's 6 attempts, he's never beaten Crystal Palace.
That's embarrassing. I mean, look,
when we played really shit for them and tried to handicap them and give them a bit of a G up so they could win, they still couldn't win.
The hilarious thing was when I actually looked why Seagull Simon went so quiet, I actually stumbled across a tweet where he then, after insulting TFD, insulted his own fans because they were saying when Wilfred Zaha dies, we'll have a party. And it was like, well, there's your example as to why no one really gives a shit about Brighton fans, because, you know, but fair play to him. He did call it out, because for any fan base, you know, everyone's got that dark corner of the world. And yeah, it's uncalled for. Don't need to be hearing that. As for the game, however, there was a game. It kind of further validated our point that, I mean, it wasn't really a rivalry, was it? It was a bit dull.
To get going, didn't it?
It did take a while. I mean, I did tongue-in-cheek message you, Jason, kind of say, our Palace playing out for the draw here.
I kind of called it at half-time. We were never going to be that bad again in the second half. To be fair to Brighton, they played really well, actually. And it was one of those typical games for them where they have the ball, they have a lot of the ball, but they simply don't, they can't find a way of putting it in the net. However, so we'll kind of glaze over that first half. But if we get to the second half and that Palace goal, now obviously at the time I didn't appreciate it because I thought Joel Ward was batshit for running into midfield and doing all the things he was doing. But can we just appreciate that in the build-up to our goal, every single Crystal Palace player passed the ball and Joel Ward started it from right back and ended up in the penalty box, cutting it back to Jeffrey Schlupp. And then what a finish from Conor Gallagher, by the way. And that, by the way, in terms of limbs and scenes, that has got to be one of the best kind of post-goal reactions I have seen in a long, long time. But Gallagher again, proving that, well, right place, right time. I mean, the audacity really from Schlupp to try and kind of backheel it and get it back to him instinctively, and the fact that Gallagher's there just to naturally collect it.
And there's only one place where he could have scored, and that was where it went in. Superb.
Yeah, exactly. And he laughed about it post-game, but he actually didn't even look up. He just literally stabbed the ball because he kind of instinctively knew that was the only way he could go. And it has to be said, to be fair, I mean, after we scored that, for the next 5 or 6 minutes or 5 to 10 minutes of that game, I mean, we could have doubled the lead. We didn't. Their goalkeeper made a good save. And then ultimately, they ended up getting one back, which, let's face it, as Gallagher alluded to post-game, it's nothing more than they deserved. They deserved the point. We definitely didn't deserve to win.
They played well, to be fair.
Given their due, and we joked about them. They when you look at everything in regards to the game, you know, it appeared to me that only one team really showed up until the final 20 minutes of the game. Mm-hmm. Because Brighton were all over Palace, and I know Palace lined up finally with Elise, Edouard, and Eze. Didn't really get going. I mean, let's be honest. Terrible penalty miss in the first half. I mean, it's got to go down as one of the worst penalties of the season.
Word for Jack Butland, because he's had a rough few years. He obviously made that mistake at Millwall. There was murmurs before the game that Guita might be out, and everyone thinking, oh, for Christ's sake, Butland, because, you know, he's not had a good reputation. But to pull a performance like that out the bag, and for him to be so honest in his post-match reaction, I think he gained a lot of respect after that game on Friday. Because he made, granted the penalty was poor, but the fact that he had his head in the game. But even before that, he made a couple of really good saves. He played really well. And also, even though Brighton dominated a lot of the game on the attacking front, it has to be said that Anderson and Gui both played their part in making sure that the ball didn't get past Butland or, you know, in front of him. Anderson, especially when crosses were coming in, really, for a change, was on it when it came to defending. So interesting that a Brighton fan actually piped up to me and said about, my opinion was, we played to deal with the press. So defensively, we sat back deeper. And this is where I think we struggle, because Eze, he hasn't played enough to warrant doing the defensive workload, to be fair. I think Elise and Edouard done well for that. But played to deal with the press, defensively did well. Midfield attack, not so much. Second best in midfield for most of the game, which was true. They dominated the midfield. Don't think we played for the draw, but we just weren't confident and progressive enough on the ball. Point gained for us, 2 loss for Brighton based on performance. Someone then just piped up saying, your defence was good or lucky. They should have conceded 2.5 goals according to the stats. That's not good. And I was like, well,
those stats are crap, though. Come on. You should have scored that. It's like, well, why didn't you then? Grow up.
my point was then, well, if we should have conceded 2.5 goals because of stats and that's not good, what does that make Brighton's attack? Because if we're going to base it on stats, they didn't get their 2.5 goals. So does that mean that their attack is woefully inadequate?
Yeah, but those stats, people who are on the receiving end of it only look at those stats as to how they want to see the stats. They see it as your defence is crap rather than our attack wasn't good enough.
Yeah. Every single year, the last two seasons, they get ahead, they get cocky, saying, oh, look, we're 9 points ahead of you, 10 points ahead of you. And the last two seasons, they've ended up finishing below us. So
It's almost like that kid when you're at school used to like always pick on you for certain some things. And this is the kid that doesn't ever wash. He's a smelly kid. He's thinking, hang on a minute, I don't care about you, mate. And then he walks into a door and you have a bit of satisfaction or whatever. And it's just like, well, I don't actually care about you. I've got bigger fish to fry, which is what Palace and actual local rivalries and local derbies, etc. The thing is, Brighton fans didn't even know if it was a derby or if it was a rivalry, because some of them were saying, oh, let us have our local derby. And it's just like, well, hang on a minute. The person you're replying to didn't even call it a local rivalry, a local derby. They called it a rivalry. So what is it? That's what was so confusing, which is why we asked the question.
It's definitely a rivalry. To clarify, it's of the Liverpool Man United elk, Leeds Man United elk, is that kind of
thing. Yeah, Leeds, definitely. Chelsea, all of them. It's a rivalry.
It's a rivalry. But,
except a little bit less successful.
It's events that have happened in the game that have led to it becoming... It's like an NFL-NBA kind of rivalry. There's not a local rivalry. It's just something that's happened previously, which was a cup of coffee being thrown over. But just to flip it on its head, you know, in terms of a game of football, Brighton will feel hard done by it. But again, they scored in the last 10 minutes, just to add that on. Again, well, they didn't, Anderson did, but hey-ho. We come to the middle segment. Now, the Wheel of Wonder would have returned this week, but because of the few technical issues that Jason was having, we can't do that. So what we're going to do is just do the predictions, and we'll go straight in to the second segment. So predictions, there were four games. West Ham Leeds was the first, might as well get that out of the way because no one got anywhere near that. We thought there'd be goals though, fair play to us. 4-1 and 3-1 West Ham we all had. Obviously none of them got them right. Aston Villa Man United was the other game. Posse, you said 2-1. Cookie said 1-0 Villa. Jason said 1-0 Man United, and I said 1-1. So I get a point. Fair play, caught that one. So I go currently 2 points clear of Jason now. Brighton Palace, one of us got the exact scoreline. So we had Brighton 1, Palace 2 from Jason. I said Brighton 2, Palace 1. And I've got to be honest, and this is going to be a bit embarrassing, but I've royally fucked one of them because I put Cookie's name down twice and I don't know who out of Cookie and Cossie said it was going to be Brighton 1, Palace 1. One of you said 2-1 Brighton and the other one said 1-1. I'd like to think that might have been your score, Coss, but I will have to validate that on the next show. But one of you did get it exactly right.
I think that might have been Cookie. I can't say,
I will listen to it and I will clarify it on the next show, just so it doesn't get lost. Yeah, I bet you would. And Newcastle Watford, well, we all thought one of the teams would win and none of them did. Again, did 1-1. We will be coming on to that one because that is a very lackluster scoreline considering the circumstances. I tell you what, bearing in mind we're going straight into the second segment, it makes absolute sense that we start with that one.
A bit of breaking news for you, just as we've touched on a couple of things there. Burnley's application for the game tomorrow has been approved.
There we go. Five games in hand now, Burnley.
At some point, they're going to have to play those five games and they're going to complain about fixture congestion and injuries again.
Fuck them.
Oh, the players are fatigued. The players are fatigued. Yeah, get over it.
Manipulating the system. Well, let's talk about the two teams that will be royally pissed off with that decision. Newcastle 1, Watford 1. I mean, if that couldn't have been any more lackluster, bearing in mind they both needed a win, I must say I caught a few glimpses of that. And Newcastle, I mean, St. Maximin in particular at times looked ridiculously good. But once again, Newcastle come up short. I must say, Watford put in a really good shift as well, didn't they? They had a lot of attempts. But it's just, I mean, Newcastle had 12 and 1 on target, which is, you know, something they're hoping Chris Wood will be able to sort out, even though he played in that game, which was even more ridiculous. We thought Watford were going to have a few issues considering they refused players going to AFCON and things like that. It didn't look like it made a bit of a difference, and it looked like it meant a lot at the end as well. So
I've got to say, for Newcastle, if I'm a Newcastle fan, I'd be mega, mega worried, especially after, you know, Norwich putting the canaries amongst the pigeons there with their result over the weekend. If I'm Newcastle, Norwich have now managed, albeit it's 1-5 for them, but Norwich have shown that they're capable of winning a game out of nowhere, and that's with no new signings. Newcastle, are, you know, we're halfway through January. They're talking about two new defensive signings, one in Tarkowski, who's bottom of the league with Burnley, another one who's an up-and-down Brazilian centre-back for Sevilla. I'd be very worried if I was Newcastle. I mean, look, the fact is, you look at the bottom of that table, the fact that Norwich have won three times as many games as Newcastle just really puts it into perspective. You know, Norwich get a lot of stick, but they've still managed to get three wins, which is obviously nothing. But when you compare it to Newcastle and Burnley, you know, for Newcastle especially, 1-20, 9 draws. So if they replicate that form again for the next half of the season, that's only going to muster them another 12 points. I'd be worried if I was Newcastle. I think Watford will be the ones that get away. And I think Norwich, while they'll be hit and miss and they'll probably win one, lose three, I still think Norwich will probably do enough just to kind of keep themselves in and amongst it.
I think it's the hope. That's what kills us. I'll get onto it in the Norwich segment. But as you say, we're a team that will pick out a win, look great, look hungry, play good football, albeit against a poor Everton side, but still they've got a £500 million squad. Like, you know, the finance is in there.
The worry for Newcastle now, of course, is, I mean, Burnley are bottom, but say now they've got the January window to get replacements in for Chris Woods and players they've lost, and if they lose Tarkowski. So if they've got time to get the players in they need, as opposed to Newcastle, the worrying thing for me, if I'm a Newcastle fan, is the fact that Burnley have three games in hand. And now their game, Newcastle fans would have hoped that that game went ahead tomorrow and probably Burnley win that. So there's a bit of daylight between Newcastle and Watford. But
well, as a Norwich fan as well, I was hoping that game was going to go ahead because obviously we play them on Friday.
Exactly.
So I'm pissed off about that as well.
You know, but for Newcastle, I mean, look, if Burnley as much as win two out of those last three games in hand, Newcastle are in deep, deep trouble. And I think they're sleepwalking. I mean, they're already in a relegation battle, but I think they're sleepwalking into the Championship at the moment.
What do you make of, just briefly, Newcastle, if they get the players that they want to come in? Do you think that could keep them up or not?
No, I'm not convinced by the players. Like I say, the two centre-backs they've been linked with, an unproven La Liga prospect, and in the winter period as well. And then also Tarkowski, who's bottom of the league with Burnley currently. And then there's also been links with Ben Mee as well, so who's also bottom of the league with Burnley. And you're only bottom of the league with, you know, if your defence is not on it right. So if they're even linked with one or both of them, then you've got to think they're in trouble.
You can spend all the money in the world. However, if you rely on those players to gel instantly get that winning feeling, which is going to come when? It hasn't come in the last 20-odd games, so when's it going to come? It's a bit deluded. You can't throw your money at players and just hope that they're going to come and perform instantly and gel. That's as simple as that.
I mean, that's their games that Newcastle need to be winning, you know, if they're really going to push on and stay up, because, you know, they've all they can do is control their own fate, and they're not doing that. On to another game, I guess we can kind of palm this on, and we've got two games which really did, you know, make a world of difference to the teams involved. Liverpool-Brentford. Now, the reason I thought we'd come to this game, it's not so much to discuss the game in itself, because, you know, I think the scoreline's pretty much in the script. The only thing that is interesting is, what's your take on all these murmurs that are coming out regarding the Salah contract situation and fans commenting on lack of investment that Klopp's had? And I think it was even raised today on TalkSport how Liverpool got to be very careful they don't hit that point whereby it will be too little too late, where the squad will become very stagnant and you know, they are literally living off scraps at the moment, the final scraps of each player that they've got. We mentioned last week on our show where we talked about what they need with Salah and Mane in that situation. Have they got to be careful with Klopp? Because, I mean, when was the last time they really heavily invested and added to that season whereby they brought in your Van Dijks and your Alissons? It's been a while, hasn't it?
That's exactly what I said last week about my friend who's a Liverpool fan who gets irate about the lack of investment in that squad, that there's only so long and so many times you can rely on the front three. You know, Firmino is sort of dropping off a little bit, but Jota came in and he's done amazing. But that's not going to happen every single time. And well, if you look at the value of what Klopp has put onto Liverpool Football Club, if it wasn't for him, that club would not be anywhere near as much as what they're worth now.
Well, someone made a really good point. Whether was it Liverpool's objective to just finally win that league title? And they've done that and they won the Champions League. Happy days. Or is their objective, which, let's be honest, is what it should be, if they want to get rid of Man United and all that heat, was their objective to dominate English football for a number of seasons, which is what it should be? You know, if you want to get rid of the class of 92 talk and all of that, and let's be honest, Liverpool really did have the foundations to do that.
That's what
Why
my
aren't
said.
They doing it? Where is it just a one-hit wonder on? And they're happy to go back to 50 years?
Where was the next push on? Because they had all the credentials. And the thing is, what was frustrating about, obviously, you know, I follow Liverpool, what was frustrating is when you saw the injuries to Van Dijk that season when they only just scraped the top four, if they would have dropped out the top four, then that could have been a spiral going down and down and down. That you never know, that it could have been the Liverpool between the early noughties and the, you know, the tens, etc., until eventually won the Premier League. You never know what could have happened.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and I'm going to say, so I again saw the tweet, I think it was a tweet that went out saying, Liverpool have got a decision to make. Either they're happy they've won the league, and obviously they had success again in the Champions League over the last couple of years. They've got to decide now if they're happy with that and they just kind of go along with it, or they dominate world football like a Man City, Real Madrid or whatever. I'll be honest, I think, and we know how shrewd the Liverpool owners are with their sales of players, but I don't believe for a second they would be sitting here right now from kind of 3 or 4 years ago when Salah signed and talking about a player that would demand the same kind of wages as a Lionel Messi or, you know, that kind of top bracket.
We're not even talking Lionel Messi. He's on his current contract, Salah's, is £100,000 a week less than the Aubameyang's. So is it really, I know it's horrible money, full stop, but £100,000 a week less than Aubameyang? And it's miles ahead of Aubameyang, even when Aubameyang was at his peak. And if they don't invest, like I said, like when they sold Coutinho, they used all that money to buy the two players they needed. However, with an aging squad, players need to come in. The youth are doing really well there. And there's only so many times you can buy an £8 million Robertson and turn him into possibly the world's best left back. That's not going to happen every single transfer window. Like, Klopp, what was it, £8 million for Coutinho, got £140 million for him eventually. And it's just like, well, that's not going to happen every week to then reinvest in your team in 5 years' time when it's investment is needed. You need to back Klopp because he's an incredible manager, incredible guy, and every single player in the world wants to play for him.
Yep. Yeah. No, I thought I'd mention it because, you know, there's not a lot to say about Liverpool 3, Brentford 0, and Brentford fans just don't get too upset about it. But, you know, we'll come back to it. But it was expected, and hey-ho, they absolutely wiped the floor with them. So many shots on goal and whatnot. The final two games then, one of them was Wolves Southampton. Very good game. Wolves finally scored more than one goal.
And Traore scored.
He did.
After missing a sitter, obviously.
Nice sign off for him. Not that I'm saying he's going anywhere.
Oh, yeah. What was your opinion on the penalty decisions? One of them given from VAR, one of them didn't even really go to VAR.
I mean, are you surprised? Are you surprised still now?
I thought the Southampton one that the Wolves penalty that was given, I thought he got the ball and then it was just his momentum that sort of took him, and it was a little bit clumsy, so you could understand why he's given it. But the other one, this on Match of the Day, they spoke about it extremely quick and just said, "Oh yeah, that would have been really soft." You think there's much softer penalties that have been given this season?
I don't know about you both, but I don't agree with the whole momentum thing anyway. Like, you can't stop momentum. If you get the ball, you can go through them as hard as you want. I couldn't give two shits. I mean, you go in for the ball and your studs are showing. Yeah. It's how it is, you know. You can't. I'm sorry. It's irresponsible, and it's you're opening up to injuries trying to pull out.
Exactly. The one thing I was clutching at straws with that. I could understand it, but I don't agree with it.
I didn't think you would. The one thing I think we all can agree on, and on Costi, I'm pretty sure it would have had you jizzing in your pants, to put it politely, was James Ward-Prowse deciding to be Cristiano Ronaldo for 5 seconds.
And, well, I've got to go to the toilet.
I thought there was a deflection. I've got to be honest. I couldn't believe it when I saw it in slow motion. And it didn't.
Arsenal's midfield, and he was like, nah, 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 nah.
That boy could get into, I'd
Liverpool's.
Say...
If James
well, at the
Milner,
moment, maybe.
Yeah, if James Milner is playing every single week for Liverpool at the minute and Keita's coming in and not really doing much, are you telling me that Ward-Prowse couldn't get into one of the world's best teams right now in
I
Liverpool?
I think the only team he doesn't get into is Man City at this
exactly,
moment in time. Chelsea even are struggling with creativity. But
the guy's the genius.
Honestly, he is set-piece genius.
But yeah, I thought, like, we were talking about Southampton and they lost, obviously, after doing well last week, as they always do. But I thought they were horrendously unlucky against Wolves. They didn't get the rub of the green with the VAR decision. They had a ridiculous chance in Teller, if you saw it, about 3 yards out, and somehow he put it over the bar. I thought Southampton were brilliant. I thought Wolves were good, but it was a great game with two teams, and somehow they lost 3-1. But I've got full of praise for Southampton at the minute, because they looked spot on.
I mean, it pretty much meets what Jason said about 1 week they'll win and then 1 week they'll lose. They lost to Wolves, they beat Brentford. It seems to be the way forward. But the fact that Southampton is showing some kind of, you know, style in the way
completely
that they're playing.
Different.
I can't
see
them.
The manner of their wins-losses, usually is sort of like, oh, they're shit. Oh, they're brilliant, they're shit. Whereas the loss against Wolves, I thought, do you know what? This team looks good. And somehow they ended up on the losing team.
Well, fair play to them. Fair play to them. It makes you think whether Wolves' goalkeeper is just a magician. But they had 13 shots, Southampton, and 10 of them were on target. You know, fair play to them.
You can't say that was a lacklustre performance, a typical performance after a loss. So, yeah.
Southampton are very close to Palace, Jace. I mean, do you feel Southampton have got enough to sort of stick around that area where they are now?
I think they'll be like Palace. I think they'll be very close to each other. Like Palace are the same. They'll win 1 week or win two in a row, then they'll lose a couple. I think they're there or thereabouts. Although with Southampton, you always think with the way they play, they're only ever one or two games away from a ridiculous result where they concede five or six. And, you know, it's one of them, but they won't go down. Like the bottom three isn't decided, but it's certainly going to be three teams from those bottom kind of four or five. So, you know, relegation talk, I don't think happens. I think it's just how consistent they can be and what results they can pull together now. And that will ultimately come down to, as with all the teams, obviously we always say it comes down to injuries, of course, but as we've seen over the last few weeks, although it should probably play less of a part as we get into the spring and stuff, but I think a lot of it will be down to COVID and postponements. And because the problem is at the moment, you know, you look at their form and you used to look at the form table as a guide, but the reality, I mean, they've won two of their last, they've drawn two, won two and lost one of the last five, right? But the reality is at the moment, I mean, even if you look at Watford's record where they lost four out of five and that, well, they've not won any of their last five, but that postponed game tomorrow gives Watford an extra week. form, everything like that, for me goes out the window. I think it's very, very hard to read what's going to happen. But certainly, I mean, you know, Southampton on 24 points, you probably need to be safe this year. I think the net will be, it looked like it was going to be quite high, to be fair, and you might need a good kind of 38, 40 points in the beginning. But if you look at how the bottom three have tailed off, the fact that Newcastle and Burnley are still down there on 11, 12 points, Norwich are on 13, then Watford 14, and then there's a 5-point gap. You're probably not going to need more than, what, 29 points to stay up this year, I don't think. So I think it's going to be one of those seasons again where it's a very low bar and it's probably decided by the end of Feb. And, you know, I mean, Burnley could be, they lose their next three games, then they're definitely going to be gone. But Southampton will be one of them. They'll float in the middle somewhere. And, you know, it's just if they can carry on scoring goals, injuries, and if they can keep James Ward-Prowse fit, that'll be the key for them.
Yeah, and whether they hold on to him for next season is another big talking point. We'll see. Right, I saved this till last on purpose because it's going to...
You shouldn't have done that. They're not bottom of the league now. They're not last. They're third.
Oh, well, I wasn't saving them on purpose for that particular team.
I'll get my celebration hat out.
Yeah, I would quickly, because we've got a bit to say on one of the teams. Let's just say that. So what I will do, Cossie, is, and if you can kind of refrain from loving life for too long, obviously not a lot to say about your defeat to West Ham. We mentioned West Ham were played very well. It's one of those typical Norwich games, I think it's fair to say. However, fair play to you. You did remove Rafa from his post. So I'll pass it over to you to sort of talk about what you thought about the game in general. And then we do need a bit of time to discuss the big talking point, which was Everton making the cut and where they go from here. So I'm more than happy to hand over the reins to yourself. And then if you want to bring us in whenever you feel you're ready to discuss Everton, go for it.
Well, if you're a manager playing Norwich, you now know the benchmark. If you lose against us, you lose your job, which is quite embarrassing for us. However, I'll give us credit. At the start of the game, I think I was very unenthusiastic. And despite what Brighton fans were saying, that you can actually go to football stadiums and watch football, you know, and it's like, lo and behold, what, I've got a season ticket for football and I actually go and watch it in person. I don't even know what that feels like, apparently. But when they read the team sheet out, the crowd, I've never heard such an unenthusiastic crowd for when they're reading the team sheet out. And though we like to have a bit of optimism, it was sort of one of those things that's just like, oh, do we have to be there? And I've never seen so many fans on Twitter saying, I'm really contemplating not going to this game because Everton are poor and I can't see us getting anything. When they scored, obviously, the own goal, it was sort of like, oh, okay, here we go. But as a Norwich fan, I was expecting it to then turn around. I even put a bet on Everton to win before the game. However, when Adam Eder, who ended up turning into prime Ronaldo for the day, all of a sudden, I was thinking, do you know what? We're looking good. And I know Everton looked poor, but we made them look poor as well. We had the energy, the passion, the fight, three things that we've not seen for so, so long. And this was so frustrating as a Norwich fan, because you watch it and think, do you know what? We can do this. When the players put up the fight that they did on Saturday, you think, we can do it. And that's the optimism, the hope that kills you, because we'll go to Watford on Friday, look dire and lose, which will be really depressing if that happens, touch wood, it won't. But I have to praise us. We were brilliant. We looked like Grant Hanley was superb. Adam Eder was superb. Williams at the back was excellent. I cannot fault a single player. And Josh Sargent, I've been hugely critical of him. He turned up on Saturday and he looked the player that we should have signed. And as long as we can continue, we've given ourselves a fighting chance. And it got to the point where after the second goal went in, a fan ran onto the pitch and obviously got taken out, like swearing at Rafael Benitez. And then at the end of the game, exactly the same happened again with a different fan, ran on to try to get to Benitez, which, you know, says a lot, really. And yeah, it was, I think Everton sort of turned up thinking, do you know what, we're going to even lose to Norwich. And that has given us the hope and optimism that we need. So fingers crossed.
Norwich have won three games this season, something that a couple of clubs can't say they've done. And who would have thought, you know, when before you joined TFD, Cossey, when you made your, you know, we had Norwich dead and buried, and to look at them now and go, could they? Is a bit ridiculous in its own right. Granted, fully agree. You know, four games in hand, Burnley have, Watford having two. You don't know. It might still be a bit of a long shot, but it's the fact that it's even discussed, I think, is a trophy in itself for Norwich this season. Come on then. We need to discuss it because we all were in agreement that Benitez should have been the right man. Results don't lie. I mean, the results were terrible. I can't even defend it. You know, it's...
And performances.
Oh, I mean, it was one win in nearly what? Nearly 15 games. I looked at the table the other day, by the way, just quickly. Everton, in their last, 15 games, are actually bottom of the table.
That's crazy.
On 9 points in 15 games. Newcastle are on 10. Norwich are on 13 in 15 games. And Everton are on 9. So that is bad.
Relegation form.
About the result against Arsenal, where Gray got that brilliant goal.
That should have been the platform for them to kick on, surely.
Where do they go? Right, we've heard names today. And I mean, again, and I'm sorry, Brighton, for, you know, I thought I was going to spend a lot of the time giving Brighton stick today, Brighton fans, and I have, but it was all part of fun. There's a difference with Everton fans at this moment in time, because when I see names being mentioned on Twitter, as much as he's probably in decline, when I see Jose Mourinho's name mentioned with Everton, even though it's a long shot, it's not going to happen. And I see Everton fans say no. it's laughable, really.
I mean, here's the thing. The names that have been linked, strongly linked, Graham Potter, again, he was linked before. Roberto Martinez. I mean, it looks like it's not going to happen now. But
I'll jump in there. When you say Roberto Martinez, Paddy Power tweeted a picture of an Everton fan holding up a Martinez out sign.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, well, Everton are now number one in the recycling department of the Premier League because they're now reusing their manager out banners.
But even those names linked just shows there is a lack of direction at the club. And the problem you've got here is, make no mistake about it, at Everton, player power has won, as it does in most cases with managers being sacked. In the space of a couple of months, you've gone from Brands being sacked as the director of football, which, as I understand it, outside looking in, was a Benitez decision because he wasn't happy with the decisions that Brands was making. Luca Dina being sold was a Benitez-backed decision. And they obviously brought in the fullback, young fullback from Rangers, which was a Benitez-led decision. There's numerous things that have happened at Everton over the last kind of couple of months that have been down to Benitez and the board backing Benitez. So for them to then do this, like, granted, you know, form is irrelevant. Form's been terrible, and on paper he deserves to lose his job. But where do you go now as a football club? Because as an outsider looking in, there is no sense of direction. Benitez, they back to the deal. We talk about Man United and, you know, they've assembled the most expensive squad in the league and they've spent £1 billion over the course of 4 years. Everton Football Club, bearing in mind their size, have spent £500 million in the last 3 or 4 years, I should say. £500 million, half a billion pounds on transfers alone in the last 4 years for a club of Everton size. You put that into perspective, added to the fact that Benitez, to be fair to him, was hamstrung by FFP because of their big spending from the previous regimes. You then start looking back at the managers they've had, and there's been no consistency. You know, they've gone from like Marco Silva to, I can't remember who was in, was it Ancelotti after Marco Silva, or was there someone in between that? I can't remember. Or Allardyce. Then in came like Ancelotti, then he was out, and then they've had Benitez in. And it's like, again, we said it before, it's managers inheriting players from previous regimes, and the only two players Benitez brought in, or three players, to be fair, Benitez brought in, was Townsend, Gray and Rondon, all for a combined total of about £2 million. He inherited a squad in decline.
A perfect example of lack of plan, Jason. I'll let you carry on, but just to highlight this, are you telling me, and this is where I wonder if Everton fans are just smacking their head against the wall. Are you telling me when they let Luka Dinyan go, they didn't think that Rafa was due to be sacked within the next week or two? Because he only left because of the breakdown of his relationship with Rafa Benitez. And he came out and publicly said, it's amazing how my love for the club could be destroyed by one man from the outside. If you knew you were that close to letting Rafa Benitez go, why did you let Dinya go? Because now you've let him go to Villa when he didn't want to go. And now the new manager that's going to come in would have loved to have had him. And he would have loved to have stayed, probably.
Well, here's the thing.
No plan.
It's a bit of a weird situation, isn't it? Because you can't complain at the Everton owners for spending the money. The problem is, as we've said with Man United, they've spent tons of money, but there is just no plan. They jump from one manager to the next. You think back to the day, right? Now, granted, Everton were lucky back in those days because David Moyes was the gold standard. And I think maybe after David Moyes, Everton have, you know, probably become a bit of a poison chalice, much like Man United after Ferguson. But you think back to the old Everton under Moyes. They had an identity. They play 4-2-3-1, two wingers, a number 10 pivot, and then like James Beattie or Yakubu or someone or Lukaku up front. They always had that identity about them. They're obviously chasing the dream now and trying to become part of the big players, which, to be fair, they've spent the money to justify doing that. The problem is they've gone about it in a way where they've bought the best of the rest of the Premier League. They've cherry-picked a Gylfi Sigurdsson. So, for example, Gylfi Sigurdsson at Swansea was fantastic. As a number 10, he was probably one of the best number 10 and creative midfielders in the league, that shadow of a doubt. He goes to Everton, he's no longer the main man. Identity lost. And you could say that for umpteen amount of players that have gone to Everton. I mean, Iwobi should go to somewhere like Everton and thrive off being one of the main guys because he's just come from Arsenal, right? He's done nothing.
You know? £30 million. How much was it? 30+ yeah. million quid? Come on, man. I'd love to have that money.
I even think back to the days when they bought Schneiderlin, for example, who was immense for Southampton. Obviously, he was fine at Man United.
£25 million?
Yeah. You know, there's so many examples of players there that just haven't done it. And it's been money poorly spent. And the problem is now, they've got to go through the next 2 years probably not spending as big amounts of money because they've got to recover from their first wave of big investment. And they've probably got to wait now until they get the green light from the stadium and start, you know, increasing their margins again. But like, I'm no FFP expert, but from my limited knowledge, it goes on gate receipts and turnover and wage turnover, which is why Benitez couldn't spend in the summer because they've basically, it goes in 4 year cycles and they've basically rinsed their whole 4 years. So if, similar thing to Palace, where Palace had to get like Sacco's and all these big earners, you know, and we had a high turnover of players this summer. That's going to have to be Everton this summer. So that means you're probably looking at Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison and probably thinking one or if not both of them are going to have to go so that Everton can actually go again and start rebuilding. Because if they keep them two, well, Richarlison's going to demand a bigger contract, as is Calvert-Lewin, and rightfully so. More highly strung by FFP. And then where do you go?
2 points, really. Just to wrap up the past with Everton, and then we'll quickly discuss their future going forward. How can a club spend 500 million and be worse than where they were 5 years ago or even back? I mean, there was a question. Would Everton today beat David Moyes' team of 10 years ago?
No. And didn't Moyes get into the top four?
They wouldn't get close to that Tim Cahill, Stephen Pienaar side. I'm sorry. Not even close. I think they get battered.
And they weren't the best players. Moyes turned them into the players that they became.
Players exactly. Like that. I mean, you know.
They weren't the best of the rest, but they were hungry enough to like then perform better than the best of the rest that they spent £50 million on a head for.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you think of they're like the classic Everton of David Unsworths and Tony Hibberts and all of them, and they were laughable, but they
need
a
to
team.
Go back to that. But yeah, exactly.
They were a unit.
They wore their heart on their sleeve, and they had the passion and the determination.
100%.
I always say, and for teams like Everton, where they want to spend big and do it with the big boys, right? Palace did that a little bit under Pardew. We went for Johan Cabaye initially, and then we had a taste for that and thought, oh yeah, right, who can we get in next on big money? Then we got Benteke from Liverpool. But the problem is for clubs, Everton have got a little bit of more bandwidth because they've got a bigger stadium and their gate receipts are higher. But the problem is when you're a club of Palace or Everton side, you can do that and you can have two or three big players on big wages. But where Palace went wrong and nearly got relegated on it is you get a couple of injuries, you don't have the money to then have decent squad depth. So then your backups become like Fraser Campbell and, you know, shit like that. And it's the same with Everton now. They've got themselves to a point where they've spent so much and they've got so much on their wage bill. And the problem is these players aren't in a hurry to leave because no one else is going to pay them their wages. So they're in no hurry to leave. So they're going to have to see out their contracts. And for a club of Everton's size, unfortunately for them, they're going to have to stomach that until their new stadium opens and they actually manage to use it in order to get that flexibility. Now, in the summer, it's a given that one of Richarlison or Calvert-Lewin, without a doubt, is going to be sold. But it has to happen, because if not, they don't move.
Interesting. We'll see where we are next week. Everton probably have their manager. I mean, to be honest, at the moment, it would make sense to just give it to someone who cares about the club, like Duncan Ferguson, for the time being, and then reevaluate your options at the end of the season. You know, it doesn't make sense taking someone right now. I don't think there's that many great managers on the market anyway. And if you do get one, it's going to cost you a hell of a lot of money, which they clearly don't have. Otherwise, they should have given it to Rafa anyway. We need to do predictions. So that's the end of the games. We've got through them. So thank you. Now we come on to predictions, and we need to do a who's up or down, actually. We haven't done one of them in a while. So the first game that's up for prediction is Leicester-Brighton. That is the first game. I've got all Cookie's scores. Cookie has said it will be 2-2. Who's up first?
That's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah, I was about to say, because Leicester haven't played for a while, actually. They've had their last round of games postponed.
That could benefit them, though. So I'm going to go 2-0. Is it at Leicester, yeah?
They've got, obviously, Tottenham in midweek, by the way. And then, yeah, they're at home to Brighton as well.
I'm going to go 2-0 Leicester. Sorry, Brighton, don't take offence, please.
I'm on the fence with this one. Depends what Leicester turn up, and with Vardy being out as well. But given how they pushed Man City the other week, that's the last game I remember them playing, so I don't even know if that is correct. I'm going to say a draw as well. I'm going to go 2-2.
Yeah, I've gone for a draw. I've said 1-1. It does seem like a long time since Leicester last played. Their last game they played was the Liverpool win. They beat Liverpool 1-0, and that was on the 28th of December. And then they played Watford in the FA Cup. So that's a long time. The next game is Man United West Ham. Cookie says 1-1.
That's at Old Trafford, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm going to say 2-1 West Ham.
Exactly the same as me.
I'm going to go 2-1 Man United, just because they're the jammy bastards to sort of pull off that horrendous kind of result.
I mean, to be fair, put it this way, if West Ham win that, the reason why I say West Ham is, one, West Ham need to win because Arsenal have got two games in hand hanging over them, and obviously Spurs with three games in hand. But you can make a case, barring the outcome of the Arsenal-Tottenham games in hand, West Ham win that and get to 40 points. That'll leave Man United on 32 points. That's basically probably top four wrapped up.
And I do hope West Ham smash them, don't get me wrong, but purely for predictions.
Next game was Brentford Wolves. Cookie says 1-0 Wolves.
Bloody hell, I didn't think he could ever say anything against Brentford. I was going to go 2-1 Wolves.
I've gone 2-1 Wolves. So are you agreeing
as well? I've just looked at the odds. They're favourites as well.
Are you taking 2-1 Wolves, Koss?
Yes, please. Yeah,
I'm going to go 1-1. Big game for Brentford midweek against United at home. Put all their energy into that.
Good point. I didn't even look at midweek games, to be honest. And the final game, another big one, Leeds Newcastle. Cookie has said 2-1 Leeds.
I'll go 2-0 Leeds, please.
3-1 Leeds. Newcastle winning coming because we've all gone for the same. Leeds win that, it's a cup final for them. They win that, they pretty much guarantee their status, I think, and get themselves out of it, any relegation talk as well.
Yeah, I thought they might have been out of relegation with that West Ham win, to be honest, but I do think that will pretty much confirm it. For that reason, I'd probably say this game's going to mean a lot to them. I'll go 2-1 Leeds as well. I just think that's one final push and they're safe. Happy days. Jesus Christ, I can't even remember the last time we did a who's up or down, so I'm going to give us 3 moves each. So, look at your tables and decide where you think that's at.
At the minute, I've got Villa in 12th and then Palace 11th, so I'm going to switch them around. Sorry, Jace.
I'm going to keep mine simple because I think the best possible outcome for Everton right now is potentially a 13th place finish, give or take. And I've currently got them in 10th. I haven't moved them in that long. So I'm going to move them down 3 places, which mean Wolves, Villa and Southampton will go above them. And then obviously I can play it from there. So that puts Everton in 13th for me. So that's my 3 spaces done, just because everything else looks about right.
Yeah, I'm putting Everton from 13th to 15th as my other 2.
Okay.
Which then put Southampton and Brentford up. However, I will be putting Brentford down next time.
And Jace, can you remember yours?
No, but I've basically focused on the top of the table. So for me, I've moved Man City back to top, Chelsea third, Liverpool second.
Well, that's episode 33 done. Jace, would you like to sign us out? Go for it. Guns blazing. Get us out of here.
No. Well, thanks to turn up. As I say, Cookie, there is no more postponements after this point. So we will be back in, I believe, full swing next weekend. No postponements for me. Onwards and upwards. We'll see you back next week, Cookie. Lads, enjoy the rest of your week. Premier League, sort it out.
Thank you very much. See you next time.
Have a good one.
Bye, everyone.